to Not Terrible. I'm Jess Hooker.
And I'm Mary Graham.
This is episode 4 of the Not Terrible podcast. Today we're hearing from Mary as she tells us about a major struggle in her marriage, how it all fell apart, and the work being done to put it back together. We'll address addiction in families and begin to unearth the cycle that so many of us are caught in. Not Terrible, a field guide for the hopeless optimist.
Hi, my name is Mary, and I'm married to an addict and an alcoholic. And that feels scary to say out loud, but also I believe in the truth and telling the truth, and that's the absolute truth. My husband, Chris, struggles a lot, and it's made a rough road for our marriage. We've been married almost 12 years. We got married on the 2-year anniversary of our first date, all the way back in 2006. We had dated for a while, and I felt like we knew each other well. We had started dating after he came home from college. His parents were divorcing, and he came home to help with the mess of that, and we reconnected after just being casual acquaintances for a while. So spent 2 years getting to know each other. We both come from families that have a lot of relationship struggles, so we felt like we were doing a lot of things differently and right by addressing things that we thought might be a problem. I am honest and share often, and I wrongly assume that other people do that too. And my husband comes from a family where you don't say things and you don't share things and you hide things. That has been taught over many generations. And so I was not completely aware of all the things I was getting into when I married into the Graham family. So a few years pass, and you know, there's that honeymoon period of after you get married or after you commit to someone for long term, and you think, I remember thinking stupid things like, I don't understand how people get divorced, or people hate the people that they're married to. I just don't understand that. That naive, dumb, young thought that how could this ever go bad? It goes bad. So a few years in, we started talking about kids. We had our first daughter, Elliot. We call her Ellie. She was born in 2009. And I was still working full-time as a teacher, and Chris was working as an exterminator. And there would be days where I would be at home making dinner or something, and he would come home late. Or I would ask a question, and he would answer vaguely. Just kind of weird, odd, not totally understanding why it was setting off a radar in my head, but red flag, this doesn't make sense. I remember one time he came home from work and it was late and he got caught in a lie. And it was just a simple lie of where he was. I called him to see where he was and he started his car and I could hear when he started his car, it dinged. And he told me as he was starting his car, he was on his way home and I heard his car start. And I was like, well, why are you just starting your car? And so then he was like, oh, I'm actually just sitting in a parking lot reading a book. And I was like, huh, that's weird. Why would you go sit in a parking lot after work instead of come home to your wife and your daughter? So when he got home, I was upset. And I remember saying, if you're lying about small things that don't matter, what else are you hiding? And that was probably 2010, late 2009. And I think if there is one thing that has echoed in my head for the past 7 or 8 years, it's that phrase. If that would have been a movie, that would have been the foreshadowing to the rest of our lives. But it wasn't a movie. It was real life. And we're never that lucky. Like, we're never that lucky. So the following summer, July 2010, we went on a family vacation. We were, you know, young and broke, and we had a baby, and we weren't ever traveling, but my parents generously took my siblings and our families on a vacation. We went to Gatlinburg and got a cabin in the mountains, and it was just a fun week of, like, going somewhere when we didn't have money to go anywhere. So one afternoon, we were all together, and Chris wasn't there, and I remember feeling instantly like something was wrong. And the thought I had, I've never said out loud, and I'm afraid to right now, but it's not what I envisioned happening in that moment. So I couldn't find Chris. I went out on, like, this was a three level, like, in the mountains, lots of porches everywhere, like typical Gatlinburg house. And the porch off our floor, I walked out, and Chris is in the middle with his little bag of drugs and his pipe, and just sitting on the porch doing drugs. And I just said, "What are you doing?" And I actually took the pipe, which was lit, and threw it into the forest. And as I'm, like, feeling my life fall apart, I'm also like, "Smokey Bear says this is wrong." Like, it's so weird, the things you think in the moment of, like, absolute chaos, that I was also like, Smokey the Bear would not like this move I just did. Uh-huh. Like, and I remember that vividly of, like, this is how you start forest fires. I'm going to throw this into the woods. And the next day or two, a lot of lies and stories and holes started being filled of, okay, well, here's the thing. I have a drug problem. And here's the thing. I have been lying to you since we started dating, and I don't use needles, but if I can smoke it or snort it or swallow it, I have done it, and I do it often. And when I disappear on the weekends to go hiking with my friends, we're just doing drugs. I'm spending our family money on drugs. I am stealing drugs from clients. I am doing a million things, and I don't really think I have a problem, but this is who I am. And I lost my mind. And I kind of just feel like I need to stop and say, like, whatever your personal views are on, like, smoking pot or a million other things, my own personal view is, like, I have two viewpoints that I come from. So one is a biblical viewpoint, just because I'm a Christian, but also the viewpoint that taking anything into your body to alter your feelings or what's going on inside is not healthy, and it's also probably a cry for help. So I have a really hard time with the lax view that some people have on smoking pot, which, like, I have friends that smoke pot. Like, I don't want to judge you or say that. Well, yeah, I just don't. But for our family, for the choices that we were making, he knew that that was not acceptable. And he knew that he had been hiding lots and lots of things. Our friend Chrissy, one time was over at our house. It was after Elliot's birthday party. And we were upstairs going through, like, putting her presents away. And just, like, I think it was our first birthday. And all our family had just left, and we were in Elliot's room. And I remember we were sitting on the floor, and we smelled pot, like, strongly smelled pot. And I remember Chrissy saying, "Dang, that's some good stuff somebody's smoking." Yeah. And I ran to the window to look to see what neighbor was outside smoking pot. And no, I couldn't see anyone. I was like, "That's so weird." Hindsight is, my husband was in the basement smoking pot. The good stuff. Like, I'm glad you're using our money when we felt like we were broke all the time to buy the best drugs that you could get your hands on. We came back from that vacation and separated, and he enrolled in an outpatient program. 2 days after we got home from vacation, I found out I was pregnant with our daughter, Harper. And we were living separated. He was living at his mom's house and going through an outpatient rehab program, but not convinced that he needed it and not convinced that he really had a problem. And I wasn't too worried about convincing him of his problem, but I was very worried about convincing him that that was not allowed in our lives. So whether he wanted to be a part of it or not, that was up to him, but he wasn't allowed to do that. Also, we had made the decision when we had kids that Chris would stay home with them. I've always been the higher breadwinner with the insurance and the better job. So he was staying at home with our daughter during the day and I was at school working. And he was making a lot of bad choices while he was caring for our daughter. And I couldn't get over that. I couldn't get over that. I still have a hard time saying that, actually. So he went through a rehab program, and at the end of the 3 or 4 months, whatever it was, he was working during the day and then going for, I think, 3 to 4 hours a night, Monday through Friday. He acknowledged that that was not an acceptable way to live, and he chose to live a drug-free life. So every July, as that came around, yes, clean and sober, let's celebrate another year of you being clean. He had said through the program near the end that he realizes he has addictive tendencies, and he had never really drank much alcohol. He grew up with a dad that was an alcoholic, and he knew that he did not want to be like that. So there had never really been drinking. I drank socially, but we had never really kept alcohol in the house. He never really drank. But he had said, because I am self-aware enough now to know that I am genetically predisposed to be addicted to things I try, I'm not going to drink. Okay, cool. So we celebrated year after year of him being clean in every July. The last time we celebrated that was in 2017, and that was 7 years of being clean and sober. Around that time, maybe a little bit before that, and maybe the year before that, things started to feel off again. But I knew he wasn't doing drugs. I, through the process of earning trust back, had bought drug testing kits off the internet. I had those available. He could take them at any time. He knew that. And slowly over the years kind of built the trust of like, yeah, I do believe you're clean. But about 5 years into him being clean, I figured out that something was wrong again. But, well, that sounds like I knew. That's incorrect. Things fell off. We were not communicating well. He was starting to disengage from our family. I started hating him. Like, we would have conversations and he wouldn't remember them in the morning. We are both introverts. We like to be alone, but we also like to be together. He's always encouraged me. He's always been a really good encourager of like, go have dinner with your friends or go see a movie on Saturday afternoon by yourself if you need that. Through my writing and some of the social media and like things I'm invited to, he was always like, yeah, go do that. Like he was always very, very accommodating. And I thought it was just because he was a good supportive husband. Around the fall of 2016, we celebrated our 10-year anniversary and we took a trip to New York City. Leading up to the trip, I remember thinking, I actually don't want to go anywhere with him. I can't stand to be around him. Things feel weird. Things feel off. I actually had just gone to the doctor and said, I think something's wrong with me. I think my hormones are out of whack. Something's wrong. I need medicine. I'm angry all the time. I'm suspicious all the time. I feel like I'm going crazy and I can't figure out why. Like, I feel crazy. So I was put on some medicine to like handle anxiety. And then we moved. We decided at the last minute, my grandparents, the house they lived in and raised my father in, and his siblings. My grandfather passed away a couple years ago. My grandma was too much for her. She was putting on the market. We decided at the last second to try to sell our house and move there. So the chaos of like getting a house ready and moving and all this stuff, I kind of forgot that I hated Chris because we were busy doing other things, but things still fell off. We move, and that's March. It's the beginning of 2017. And about the spring of 2017, we were very active in our church, and my husband is on the worship team. He plays the bass guitar, and he came home from church one day, acting funny. And I asked him about it. Nothing really happened. A couple days later, he calls and tells me that he was caught drunk at church on stage leading worship and that he's an alcoholic. And I remember screaming, "We're not doing this again. This is done." And I was out shopping with my grandma. Take my grandma shopping every week. We go to the Cracker Barrel. I was standing in the Cracker Barrel, like dining room, walking out. And I remember grabbing the table and thinking that I couldn't walk. Like, and we can talk about personality types obviously later, but I will tell you that the way I'm made is I feel my emotions, like, physically. And I just thought, like, well, this is it. Like, I'm not doing this again. My husband had set up a counseling appointment that night. I don't know why. I think because he was too afraid to be in a room with me by myself. I'm allowed presence, and I don't, especially when I'm angry, keep anything inside. So I think he was literally scared of me at that time. So we went to counseling. I learned that my husband had been drinking for the past 3 years at work. He was an exterminator, and he drove around all day, and he would drink and drive. Like, when he left our house in the morning until when he came home at night, he was drinking. When we would have conversations and he wouldn't remember them the next morning, when he would slur his speech, like, hindsight is that this is, of course you were drunk. Of course. But things happened just far enough apart that I never got a real clear picture or saw a pattern that I was living with an alcoholic. And what was funny is we never really kept alcohol in the house. Like, I'm a social drinker. I'll have a drink with friends, or maybe I'll get a bottle of wine, and it takes 2 weeks to go through it. And it normally goes, you know, flat and gross before I finish. Like, I just don't drink. We just don't drink much. We didn't separate when I learned about this. Chris moved to the couch because I needed time to figure out how to tell my girls that their dad was leaving. And it wasn't to help him. It was to save those girls and their little hearts. The hindsight, again, that seems to be my favorite word right now, is that Chris was only sober for about 30 days. And he was pretending to go to counseling. He was pretending to go to AA meetings. He was trying to control something that he couldn't control, and also not sharing again how far things had gone wrong. In July, he was in a car accident, and he was drunk, and I don't know why some people get away with things and some people don't, but the cop didn't notice, and he came home and he promised he wasn't drinking, but I knew he was drunk and I couldn't figure out how to prove him wrong. But I remember he came home and he was sitting on the lid of the toilet crying. And I was just like, I don't even care. If you would have been killed, I don't think I would have cared. Like, that's how dead everything felt. In August, so almost a year ago, I finally found proof that he was still drinking, and I kicked him out of our house. And the following month, every time, and I know this is a pattern for just addicts and alcoholics, but every time you think you've hit rock bottom with them, they go five levels lower. So last fall, when I told him he could no longer live with us because he was a danger, I know now that he was driving us around drunk. He had multiple times hurt our children on accident while drinking. And it wasn't safe for him to live at our house anymore. So I kicked him out and he went to live with his mom, who had been married to an alcoholic and enabled an alcoholic for years. And she welcomed her baby boy home with open arms and picked up right where she left off with her husband. And I can't talk a lot about that right now because I still have a lot of anger. But enablers like that. Yeah. As a parent, I want better for my kids than what I have and what I've done, and to almost welcome them back into a lifestyle that destroyed their father, and just allow it again is, I don't have words for that. But I also know that unhealthy people make unhealthy choices. And when Chris and I met, his parents were getting divorced, and I heard the narrative that it was his father. Like, he was a drunk. He was a million things. But now, kind of digging a little deeper into that, you don't get to live and function as a raging alcoholic for years without somebody to support you. So, come to find out, they were just two very unhealthy people living and making lots of unhealthy choices together. So my husband moves home, and it became very apparent very quickly that that was a dangerous place for him. When you are trying to help someone become sober and you don't even, when you refuse to take the alcohol out of your house, which is laughable, but also, like, that's how unhealthy, people are. So, Chris went to live with some friends. He was doing really well, and then he wasn't doing really well. And it got to the point where I was not going to enable or allow him to hurt himself or others by the choices he was making. And one night, he was driving drunk, and I called the police. Because through his choices and through the way I had been surviving, he had been sheltered from a lot of consequences. And I, when I realized what was going on, I wasn't going to allow that to happen anymore. Somebody smarter than me says that you change only happens when it's more uncomfortable to stay the same than it is to change. And you know, what's hard to do, is have a job that you're supposed to drive around a car in all day when you don't have a license. So I called the police, a friend and I did, and the cops, again, I don't understand why some people get so many free passes and others don't, but they gave him the choice. They said, you can go to rehab with your wife right now, or we will arrest you for drunk driving. And it took convincing, and he only went because he didn't want to be arrested. But we took him to a detox facility where he detoxed for about 5 days and then enrolled in a long-term drug and alcohol treatment program. And he was gone for 3 months. And that was last fall. He came home a couple days before Christmas, about 6 months ago. And has started doing really hard work of therapy and AA and a sponsor and medication. Come to find out, my husband's been depressed the whole time I've known him. And he was depressed before I met him. And nobody that loved him well or paid attention to him noticed that he was struggling. And so when you've been living the past, 15 years with depression, the people you meet now don't understand that's depression or don't see those as red flags because they're just, that's your normal. And so what is Chris Graham normal is actually something I've never seen before. He lost his job last fall because he couldn't be trusted to drive around alone all day. He doesn't have access to cash anymore. Just a million little things that kind of become safety nets to make sure he's making wise choices. And there's a lot of hope in this story. And I know it feels like I'm just bringing it down 47 levels and super depressing. And I'm sure I sound amazing crying on a recording. I can't wait to hear that. But we're going to talk. If we're going to be real and talk about how to heal, we have to first talk about the mess that broke us. And I've got lots of mess and I've got lots of broken pieces, but the major one that I've been dealing with for the past year or two is I am married to an addict and an alcoholic. I chose to have children unknowingly into a family of generational alcoholics and addicts, who also struggle with mental health issues. The day this is airing, my husband has been sober 284 days. And when I said I didn't know what the real Chris Graham looked like because he's always been depressed, I can tell you what that looks like right now. When he came home in December, I remember it was right after Christmas and we were driving in our car and something happened and he laughed. And like, we have laughed about a million things. And he laughed and I kind of looked at him. I remember the exact spot we were at on the road in front of a Jehovah's Witness church on State Road 9 in Hancock County. And he made this sound that I had never heard before. And it was him laughing. And I looked at him and I was like, what was that? And it was a real, true, happy, legitimate laugh. And I had never... In that moment, I realized I had never heard my husband really laugh. Like, I didn't know what sadness sounded like. Or that he wasn't happy and he couldn't get out of it. And that made me feel horrible, even though it wasn't my fault. But, like, we had been living this, like, subpar life that I thought was good, and he was struggling and he couldn't say anything. So there's like a million parts of this story that obviously I've left out. There are lots of really good things going on right now. There are lots of hard things going on right now. And there are lots of things that maybe I can't share yet because they're not done. In AA, they teach you to take it one moment or one day at a time. And so my husband wakes up every day and says, today I'm not going to drink. Today I'm going to be sober. He doesn't worry about tomorrow. He doesn't worry about next week. He takes his medicine. He says he's not going to drink today. And then he chooses not to drink. And so that's kind of the place we're living in right now is fragile sobriety, dealing with... a lot of issues he's never said out loud or never shared. The hurt little boy that grew up to be Chris Graham that's an alcoholic, we have to go back and kind of figure out who that is. Because my husband has a lot of trauma that no one ever acknowledged. And if you don't acknowledge trauma when it happens or have people that will care for you correctly, it grows and it twists and it gets dark and it becomes bigger and uglier and does more damage. So we are living as 30-something-year-old adults who have to heal things that happened, 25 years ago. Some of them were, most of them were not his fault. All of them were not his fault, but we're living in the aftermath of a hurt kid who grew up to be a hurt adult and the adults around him that didn't do anything. And that's a heavy thing to deal with.
What did you learn about yourself when you realized that you were the wife of an alcoholic and an addict?
I learned that my desire for control has enabled my husband to get by with doing very little in our family. And when I give up some of the control, other people have to be held accountable and do their part. And it's harder to be an alcoholic when you're in charge of things or when you have responsibilities in the family. It's harder to hide when you have responsibilities. And I learned this through counseling that our marriage didn't start off balance, but as Chris struggled and the more he disengaged, the more I took on for our family to make sure things still ran smoothly, to make sure everyone was cared for and we were doing all the things that anyone in the family has to do to survive. And as I took on more because he couldn't be trusted or he couldn't do them and I didn't know why, it became so off balance that he could get by with a lot of things because he wasn't being asked to do anything. And it's easy to hide when you don't have any responsibilities. So, one of the things I've had to learn is if a relationship is really off balance, it's not a good relationship. And so if I can give up the control of doing things to make sure they're done correctly, other people will step up to the plate if I allow them to. I did not have anything to do with my husband's drinking. No one makes someone else drink. Let me say that again. No one makes someone else drink, but I helped set up an environment where he could drink easier.
Personally, what was the lowest point when you, people use the term rock bottom, but witnessing everything that had been going on in your life since the day you met Chris, realizing that the majority of your relationship was built on a lie? What was the lowest moment?
It's hard to pick one, really. I mean, to be so specific when so many shitty things have happened.
Right. But do you have the that one, yeah, where you
like
go
the
back
one
and
that
you go,
comes
that's it. Yeah.
To mind. When Chris was in detox, so 5 days of just like, you have to get all the alcohol out of your system. That night we took him, he woke up and he wasn't sure where he was the next day. Like, he had to ask where he was at. So he was very, very drunk when we took him. And we just, he was in his dirty work clothes and we dropped him off 2 hours away and then left him, a friend and I did. And he called me the next day, and like I didn't want to talk to him, but he needed some clothes, and I told him he needed to wear the hospital's clothes, and then I let that sit for 24 hours, and I just thought about, like, if I was really, really sick, what would I want people to treat me like? And what grace would I want extended to me? So I took him some clothes. And when you take clothes to someone in a detox locked down facility, you have to cut all the strings out of everything. So his like basketball shorts that he sleeps in, I had to cut the strings out of them before I could take them in a trash bag. I had to remove his shoelaces from his shoes. And the reality that I was taking clothes to my husband in a trash bag in a locked facility where they were afraid he was going to harm himself, so I wasn't allowed to bring string, was a soul-crushing moment. Like, I think a lot of things didn't feel real up until that time because I was in, like, survival mode. But cutting the strings out of your husband's shorts and removing his shoelaces because the people that are caring for him aren't sure he's not going to hurt himself, is probably, like, the lowest.
If you could share one thing with people who have that sneaky suspicion that something's not right at their house, for the people that feel like they're going crazy, for the people that things just don't add up in their life and they're starting to blame themselves, what suggestion or advice would you give someone who may be in the position that you are in?
So I believe that we're all created with, like, something inside of us that is God, like Holy Spirit. A lot of people just call it your conscience, but, like, that prompting that feeling we get all the time, I don't believe that's just a coincidence. And if something feels off, there's a good chance that it probably is. And not just like you're hormonal and you're having a bad day and you hate everyone. And so when people say something to you, it feel like you feel like you're being attacked. That's not what this is. This is a continuous unsettling. When you can't put your finger on why you feel crazy and you know you're not crazy, but what else could this be? Because nothing makes sense. I was for a very long time believing that I couldn't trust my brain. And through counseling, a lot of counseling, I'm learning to trust my gut again because it's normally not wrong. And I don't know what you do with that information, but there are, like, things built inside of us that are almost red flags if we would just pay attention. When this all kind of started happening, the shame I felt and how dumb I felt for not knowing, it was, like, paralyzing. I just felt so dumb. And my counselor explained to me that our brains are made to keep us safe. So when we're scared, our brain tells us to run. When we're, like, hungry, our brain tells us to eat food. Our brain is set up to keep us safe. There is a part of my brain that probably understood what was going on. But to keep me safe, it didn't allow, like, all the thought processes to come together. And all the dots to be connected so that I could understand, like, consciously understand what was happening. Which sounds scary to say out loud, that like my brain didn't allow me to see these things, but also makes me feel a little less dumb. That just, I couldn't put the pieces together because my brain wouldn't allow me. Because my brain knew that if those pieces were all put together, it would hurt me. But also, there's a lot of people after this all came out that said, hey, I thought Chris was drunk one time. We were at a dinner. He was standing really close to me and talking really loud. Or, you know, I ran into Chris at church one time and something felt off. And I actually thought I smelled alcohol. It was just often enough that nobody put all the pieces together either. But if people had been speaking up, not that this is anyone's fault. Chris chose to drink. But if all of those people had kind of just, and how do you do that? Like, how do you, without right. being like, without hurting someone's feelings or without being like, hey, I know this is weird, but I think your husband was drunk. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, well, he doesn't drink. So that's weird. You know, just a million little pieces that nobody ever had enough at the same time to put together. But I had feelings in my body, like physical signs that something was off. I just didn't know what. And if I could go back, I would say, don't ignore those. Push into those feelings and start asking questions that maybe don't even feel like the right questions. They might lead you to the right ones. Mm-hmm. But it's scary because then you might find answers that you don't want. That's hard. I don't know. I would say don't ignore what your body's telling you. I feel like I need to say that when my husband is healthy and clean and sober, he is like the most wonderful, caring dad goals that there is. So it's hard to say these things about him, especially knowing now where we're at and what we're working on and how we're trying to get better and the things that we understand now that no one had told us to expect or to see or to worry about. Because if you met my husband today, you wouldn't see these things when you met him. You would just meet someone who was kind and a good conversationalist and cute. You would think he's cute.
Chris Graham is cute.
That's kind of where this all went downhill. I was like, oh, he's cute. Stay away. I think we can stop. Mm-hmm. We can stop that. I don't have any more tears. I will say that my story is not unique. So when I share a story of an alcoholic spouse, or when I share stories of loving someone who's an addict, unfortunately, that's a very, very common. And when I started writing about this on my blog, the amount of people that said me too, overwhelmed me. So you might not relate to all parts of my story, but you relate to some part of my story, and that breaks my heart because this is a mess and I don't think this is the way it was intended to be. But when we come back next week, we're going to talk about like, how do you survive? How in the world am I still married? What did we do? What are we doing? How do you love an addict or an alcoholic well, whether they're using or not? What does enabling look like? What do boundaries look like? What you can control and what you can't? Those are all really important things to discuss, because I think we all know someone who is Chris Graham.
Visit us at notterrible.com for show notes and podcast extras. follow us at Not Terrible Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. We would love to hear your feedback and comments. Leave us a voicemail at 317-662-4066 or email us at notterriblepodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, Mary, I don't know if it's time for this question, but can you tell me something not terrible?
Jesse, why are you trying to bring it back up? I just wanted to be sad today.
Sorry.
Okay. What was good? My sister, so I have a sister who is 16 months younger than me, and she just keeps having babies. She just had her sixth child, like last month. And tomorrow I'm going to take my grandma, not terrible, is babies and grandparents. What about you? What's not terrible?
I just turned 37. And
you don't look 37.
Thank you. I just turned 37 and I know this is supposed to be an upper, but there were moments in my 36th year that I didn't know if I was going to make it out. So, here's to 37.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
It's going to be better, I can tell.
Me too. Okay, let's go.
Bye.
You have been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider.
When you subscribe, leave us a review. We'd love to share it on the podcast, like this one from Toastmaker999, who wrote, "Thanks for doing this new podcast. It's got to be difficult, but you are helping yourself and us too."
Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and The Off the Air Podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studios, this has been a Waco production.